Jack Buckley, give me a name.
Wilt Chamberlain.
Welcome to Give Me a Name, where a guest presents me, Ben Kirschenbaum, with a dead historical figure they find interesting, and we discuss. A few fun facts we don't mention about Chamberlain. He recorded a rock and roll single, co-starred with Arnold Schwarzenegger in Conan the Destroyer, and almost fought Muhammad Ali. We do, however, mention this.
He shoots, no good. The rebound, Luckenbill. Back to Chamberlain. He shoots, up, no good. In and out. The rebound, Luckenbill. Back to Ruckwick. Into Chamberlain.
That's the most normal.
I was going to say, you can't say Will Chamberlain's name without some emphasis. I feel like I'm not going full announcer, but I think that that's, yeah.
So Wilt, the Stilt Chamberlain. We've got the Big Dipper.
The Big Dipper, Goliath.
Goliath.
He's got more nicknames than Apollo Creed, this guy.
Yeah. I actually recently did an episode on James Brown. And that another was, guy, I think, yeah. The only guy.
More nicknames. That makes sense, yeah. Brown and Wilt were like friendly too, by the way.
Yeah, there's some similarities between the two of them.
Same era.
Same era. Both did something notable right after MLK died. That's kind of a...
Very, I don't know James Brown's story with
James Brown had a concert in Boston, and Boston was like... It was like a big thing with the mayor, and the idea was to have kind of like when Chamberlain was deciding whether to play a basketball game.
Which was... I mean, I know we'll probably get to that as we're going along, but that's against the Celtics, funny enough.
Yeah. Against the Celtics, yeah. As a way of, I guess, like making sure that people were... watching TV or in their homes and not, you know, rioting or anything like that. And James Brown gives the concert in Boston, and who knows if it's like exactly one-to-one, but Boston, the most peaceful city of the night after King died.
And they were also watching the Celtics play the Sixers at the time on
there was just a lot of TV, there was just a lot of content.
I mean, go through that right now. The thing that's funny about that is so the Celtics take a vote beforehand on whether they want to play the game or not. The Sixers don't. And Will says that, and Will says they shouldn't have played the game. They didn't vote it beforehand. At the time, he kind of goes into the locker room like 5 minutes before the game and says, like, I don't think we should be playing this game. And then they end up playing the game anyway because they're like, well, we can't stop it with 5 minutes to go. That's going to cause a riot. We have, like, thousands of fans in there already.
Right.
And then Will attributes that to losing the game, of course, because he always had an excuse.
And yeah. We're jumping right in. We don't have to do it necessarily right away, but... Will Chamberlain will forever be tied to his main rival, Bill Russell.
100%. Yeah, I mean, it's in terms of the dichotomy of the league, dichotomy of basketball, dichotomy of sports really is the individual versus the team success. So Will, kind of the ultimate individual success in terms of basketball, and Russell, the ultimate team success.
I was going to ask you if it is that simple in a sense, and maybe it's not exactly, but it kind of is.
It kind of is. I mean, if you think about, I mean, if you just want to break it down into numbers, you can say Will... averaged 50 points a game, had 100 points a game. I mean, if you just look at his resume in terms of, I think once a person said, if you look at the NBA record book, it's just Will. It's just his biography basically is the NBA record book. And then if you look at the other number, 11 titles in 13 years, 8 in a row, 10-0 in game sevens, that's Bill Russell. I mean, the ultimate team success. Will had 2 titles, so he's not a complete loser. I mean, that's the thing. He gets dinged for being a loser all the time. In part because I think people saw Wilt's individual success and be like, how could this guy not win every single time?
Right. And the thing about judging team success that's problematic is that there's a team. So it's like, did Russell have consistently better teams than Chamberlain, better people around him? Probably, other than a couple seasons.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you can debate the specific years. Definitely early in his career, it was no contest. The Celtics were way better. Late in his career, when Wilt kind of is the first guy to put together super teams, Wilt is so ahead of his time with a lot of this stuff, player empowerment era and all that stuff that people talk about nowadays. Wilt was the first with all of that, and he was on arguably two of the best all-time teams towards the end of his career, but still got beat by Russell with maybe the all-time best Sixers team. So,
and I love the rivalry too because, and we'll get into it. They're different personalities. First of all, we could say their relationship itself seems very friendly while they're playing.
They would actually, like, funny enough, had dinner with each other before the games and after the games, wherever, when they were in each other's, when they were playing against each other. They also, there were only 8 teams in the league at the time, and they expanded throughout their career. So they played each other, I believe it was 142 times in their careers. Yeah. Which is, if you think about, like, you know, going forward, I think Magic and Bird only played each other like 30 times. Like, think about other rivalries in the league. It's just unbelievable how many times these guys played against each other.
Chamberlain and Russell do have a big falling out during the finals of Russell's final season. In Game 7, Chamberlain gets hurt in the last 5 minutes.
His knee buckles, you can see. He stays back on defense and he actually gets the next rebound and then calls timeout so that they can work on his knee. What happens is the coach of the Lakers at that time, Butch Van Breidekoff, hated Wilt. They clashed horns all the time. And so Wilt is ready to come back into the game. Van Breidekoff says, "Nah, we'll win without you." And so Wilt never comes back into the game. The Celtics end up winning. Later, when Wilt gets killed for not coming back into the game, Van Breidekoff gets fired because he wouldn't put Wilt back in the game. Russell says in an interview after he retires that Wilt asked out of the game, and he says he's a loser, that you shouldn't have been able to come out of a game 7 unless he had anything short of a broken... If I was going to come out of a game 7 unless I was taken right to the hospital with a broken leg.
Right.
Wilt doesn't talk to Russell for 25 years after that.
They do mend it eventually, though, because there's you sent me over that really fun interview with Bob Costas, where the two of them are talking and they're like just joking around with each other. But yeah, I mean, a lot of tension for a while.
Russell apologizes to Wilt at a certain point personally and then publicly, saying, "No, that was wrong. I shouldn't have said that." Because really, Russell at the time was pissed because Wilt didn't play the last 5 minutes. He felt that there was an asterisk on his final title because of that. So he was personally just like, "I wanted to beat Wilt.
The real Wilt.
Beat the best team every single time."
Yeah, I mean, so I should say that Jack and I, freshman year roommates, have our relationship is probably built on conversations like the one we're going to have
today. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny.
whether it be about movies or music or sports, of course, and comparing people and making lists of different things.
Yeah.
So just a warning to the listener, or warning is that right? Just a preview for the
teaser,
listener.
Teaser, yeah.
There will be a million lists, probably, in, you know, the obvious ones of the best basketball players of all time, but also things that I was just about to ask, the best basketball rivalries of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be number one as well.
Russell. And then Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, probably two.
Well, they didn't guard each other, so that's a different... Right, so if you're thinking about... How would you determine it? I mean, Magic Bird captured the league's popularity at the time in the 80s, and everyone really tried to make that a thing. Lakers, Celtics played each other in the finals a lot.
Right.
In terms of...
You have the racial aspect. You know,
100%.
White guy versus black guy.
Popularity, of course, that was a huge thing. The second best rivalry of all time. I mean, you could argue... Maybe Duncan, Shaq, but I don't know. Like Shaq would really go at Duncan sometimes. But
maybe Shaq, Kobe, and they're
Shaq,
all the same
Kobe
team.
In a funny way. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, how do you? I mean, because it's funny because if you think about Jordan, just eviscerated directly, like in terms of a matchup. That
yeah,
you could
Jordan's
kind of say could
greatness.
Go either way.
Jordan's greatness is measured by the fact that he never had a consistent rival.
Right,
almost.
And anyone that kind of tried to make a claim, Jordan would make a point to just destroy them. Yeah. And if you're going back to Wilt Russell in terms of the strategy of that rivalry, I think it's very interesting. The friendship was in part strategic on Russell's part, that he purposefully was friends with Wilt and was talking him up and was friendly with him because Wilt was too nice. I mean, a lot of people say Wilt was way too nice. He could have dominated way more if he just tried his hardest every single time, which is kind of crazy to say considering the numbers he put up. But that Russell was gamesmanship with it, that he was brought him into a circle, made him feel like, "Ah, oh, you're the greatest guy, Will. Like, oh, you're so much better than me," and everything like that. People say, I mean, who knows how apocryphal these stories are, but that Russell would, if the game wasn't in question, he would just let Wilt score so that Wilt would feel good about it. The Celtics were way up, and then Wilt got his numbers. Wilt feels like, "Oh, I got the better of him anyway."
Right, just feeding his ego.
Right.
Which is a theme for Chamberlain, probably. Yeah,
maybe,
I mean,
maybe the biggest ego.
Maybe
of all time.
A lot of athletes, but yeah, it's interesting with Russell because... another sort of contrast between Russell and Chamberlain is how socially minded they were and politically minded. Russell is at the forefront of the civil rights movement. He's literally at the March on Washington, one of the guys who sticks up for Muhammad Ali when he decides he doesn't want to go to Vietnam, a bunch of other stuff. I didn't realize that when Medgar Evers got shot, he like went to Mississippi and helped his Medgar Evers' brother like start a whole clinic. Russell, like very much like a politically active guy.
For sure, yeah.
Chamberlain, not
totally apolitical. He was a Republican.
No, for sure. That's kind of what's funny about it. Yeah, he was like friends with Nixon. But Wilt liked being a contrarian more than anything. I think that Wilt, I mean, in his book, which Wilt, by the way, is great with titles. His first book is called Just Like Any Other 7-Foot Black Millionaire Who Lives Next Door.
Which is a great title. Just Like Any Other. That's great.
But he says his rationale for supporting Nixon in the book is what he says is like, she's that like, well, I mean, what's the point of every black person going Democrat? Then no one's got to listen to black issues. It's just in the bag that everyone's going to vote Democrat anyway.
It's an interesting argument, but it's also like, why does he have to be the guy, well, you know?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that Wilt is about Wilt. Like, Wilt says in the book that he thought he was going to be one of Nixon's, like, advisors. He says, like, I guess I was naive, but I thought I would be one of Nixon's advisors. Because if you think about, like, you know, in the Republican National Convention in 68, he was, like, center stage. He's Wilt Chamberlain, huge celebrity. Republicans weren't getting celebrities then or now, really. I mean, then more so, but still. I mean, black celebrity Wilt Chamberlain, he's the biggest black celebrity at the time, probably.
Right.
Or at least athlete. And so he was center stage at the convention. Kind of funny, he was saying he tried to convince Nixon not to... It's kind of funny when also you get these like crossover events in history, because I tend to think of basketball, too, and then you get Nixon in there, too. But anyway, he tried to convince him not to have Spiro Agnew as the vice president. So he attributes all of Nixon's faults to Spiro.
Right. And
not a bad take. Yeah. He too. That's the thing. Like Wilt, like with all these things, yeah, he's got points. And the other thing he says, he was focused mostly on foreign policy, which is by far Nixon's strongest suit. So,
and Chamberlain. Okay, so yeah.
Chamberlain's a
worldly guy. Chamberlain next to Henry Kissinger, yeah, which is already just a funny image. To right. So let's start with a little bit of Chamberlain's backgrounds. One thing that I think is important to know just about him and maybe forming his personality, it's not like he was like normal size and had a growth spurt.
No, yeah, he was always
huge. He was 6 foot at 10 years old, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, he was. So he was actually, when he was, I believe he was like 5 or 6, and he was getting a paper out because they thought he was 12. And so his mom was screaming at the guy, like, and he was like, I thought he was 12. He's like, getting a paper out, always trying to work, always hustling for money, always doing things. He was always a loner, and also in part because of that, too. Always stood out. If you think about in high school, see, this is also part of the reason why I want to talk about Chamberlain. Like, people talking about Victor Wembanyama as, like, this best prospect ever.
Right. Just explain quickly who that is.
Yeah, he's the French kid who just got drafted number one by the Spurs. He's going to be in the NBA. You should check him out. He's going to be incredibly 7'4". He can dribble like a guard. Finishes both hands. He shoots a lot from the outside, so he's a mix of different guys. But
right.
He's incredible. He just played in Summer League last week. We'll see what happens with him, but he's still very raw. Wilt, when he was in high school, I mean, some of the things are just unbelievable. He would, his high school team scrimmaged against Villanova's college team at the time and destroyed them. Villanova was one of the top college teams then as well. During his high school summers, he worked in the Catskill Mountain Resort, the Kutchers. Yeah.
There's a whole 30 for 30 documentary. I mean, it's only like 15 minutes, but about Chamberlain's time in the Catskill Mountains as a bellhop.
Right. I mean, in terms of a bellhop, too, can you think of a better guy? Will is the strongest guy ever, probably. And he would, he would just grab 8 bags and, bags and drag them up, where he got a ton of tips. And also that the Catskills, and I believe Kutchers in particular, was like a kind of hub for basketball games.
Yeah, the people who owned it were, I mean, it's Catskills, Borscht Belt, Jewish,
Will loved Jews, by the way.
Yeah, he loved Jews.
Yeah.
They were big on sports, and I think Ali went there briefly in the late 60s. Obsessed with sports, and most famously, their coach was Red Auerbach.
Red Auerbach, exactly. So Red sees Wilt at the time. He's 7 foot, at the time he's probably 6'11".
And, that's my favorite thing with like there was one thing that was like Red Auerbach saw something in him. It's like, it's pretty
exactly
it's not that.
So Red's working him out, and he says to him, like, you know what you should do is, like, you should probably, I could get you into Harvard, I think. And he's and the point with that was that at the time there was a rule that in the NBA you could get territorial draft picks, the theory being that, like, if you went to a college in a certain area and then you stayed with the pro team, then there would be more local support for it and you get more attendance with it. So if Wilt then went to Harvard, then the Celtics would have drafted him as a territorial pick.
Right.
In high school as well, Eddie Gottlieb, the owner of the Sixers, then got the rule changed that you could also pick a territorial pick from high school. And so then he encouraged Wilt, because Wilt didn't want to stay in Philly for college. And so he just encouraged him to go to a college that was nowhere near any other NBA team.
Right. So from Philadelphia, family of 9 kids.
Yep. 9 kids. I think it's 6 girls, 2 boys.
Okay. And then
Wilt, obviously.
Yeah. And then Wilt, yeah. And then Wilt himself.
Yeah.
And seems like a pretty poor family, I think.
I mean, relatively at the time, middle class, you would say. I mean, Wilt, yeah. Wilt's in his book was saying, like, we had a fine enough house. We shared rooms and everything, but we had so many kids.
Right.
And he was working a ton. His parents were working a ton. So he wasn't really wanting for much other than he wanted more and more and more, obviously. He didn't have one of these, like, hard-scrabble upbringings like some of these other guys.
Sure. And, like, Russell. Like,
right, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Again, because he's so tall, 6'11", entering high school, it's clear that... And athletic. So, like, that's the thing that we should talk about with Chamberlain, is that he ends up being 7'1", and 270 or something like that.
It fluctuate, but it got up to, like, probably with the weight training over 300 pounds.
And his main rival, again, Russell, is like, I think, how many?
6'9".
6'9", yeah. And much lighter.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the highlights, Russell looks really skinny. I mean, he's obviously a very strong guy, too, but if you think, and you're pushing him out of the post and everything. But the size was incredible. Will was by far the tallest guy when he went into the NBA.
But also, and you can speak to, so I should say that you played basketball your whole life. You also coached high school basketball.
No, well, that was,
if you don't mind my saying, when the NBA playoffs happen, Jack's life is a little bit put on pause.
I mean, I watch every single game.
He watches every single game.
I'm a maniac. Yeah.
Didn't mean to out you on that, but
well, no, I mean it's not an out.
I'm giving credentials.
That's what I mean. It's like, you know, I was telling it's kind of funny telling my friend or the girlfriend. It's just like, okay, this game is this, and so that's my schedule. It's like, what's going on with you? Oh, the Knicks were playing this team, and then whatever's going on. And also, even like during the pandemic in particular, I was going through such withdrawal. I was just watching all sorts of old games. And so you can watch on YouTube. You can watch Will Chamberlain games. You can watch all sorts of so.
Although, I mean, we can talk about the popularity of the NBA during Chamberlain's career. A lot of the games not televised.
Not televised.
Including...
100-point game.
The 100-point game.
Which is insane. I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, you could go back and forth. Will has said both things, which is it enhanced by the fact that there is no film of it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, we'll jump to the 100-point game.
That was actually, the audio was actually David Stern's, like, hold message when he was commissioner. So he would put people on hold and would just be the Will 100-point game.
That's amazing. Yeah. Instead of, like, elevator music?
Right, yeah. It would be the audio of Will's 100-point game. That's,
do you mean the very end of it, or it's, like, literally the whole game?
I think it was the whole game.
Like, there's point six. Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah,
okay. Well, because I don't, because you can find, you can't find the audio of the whole thing, I think.
Oh, again. Okay.
Like, yeah. But maybe he had the audio. I mean, it was David Stern. If there was
audio, oh, he's got power. He's got, yeah.
But it, because also, if you think about, I mean, you want to go into the 100-point game now?
Yeah, let's talk about the 100-point game.
So that's 1962.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny how Wilt sets it up in his book. It's like he's Harry Potter just taking Felix Felicis. Like, he had an all-nighter the night before.
Wait, what's Felix Felicis?
Oh, that's the potion, that the lucky potion, Harry Potter.
Lucky potion. Yes, lucky okay, potion. Got it,
you don't
got
remember
it.
Harry Potter? Come on, man.
I don't remember. I don't remember the Latin for the or the wizard.
I'm sorry. I thought you were a well-read guy. Anyway, so he's got that he pulls. Wilt is an insomniac, one of the things. So he pulls all nighters all the time. He's with a lady the night before, spends all night with her. He said he was having trouble getting with her, but then finally, like after midnight, he got with her and spent until 6 in the morning. He hopped the train for Wilt, by the way. We might have buried the lead. Speaking of the ladies, a lot of people might know him most for his claim of having slept with 20,000 ladies.
That's right.
But anyway, going back to 100-point game, which is equally statistically crazy, and so then he gets on the train to Philly from New York. Now it's kind of funny because he was living in New York while he was on the Warriors and later the Sixers,
right?
So he gets on the train to Philly to get the team bus because the game was in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So he hadn't slept at all on the team bus. He's like, he's cleaned up in cars. When they get to Hershey, he says him and the coaches are playing like a shooting pinball game, whatever, something like that. And he breaks all the records on that machine.
Right. Which I guess would be a common thing when he's saying, and he's right a lot of the time. Yeah. So I shouldn't say it as a, but whatever he's doing, he's claiming he's the best.
He's the best at whatever. And that's also part of the thing. Like if he, because he had such a complex about it, that people would always say his basketball success was just because he's big, so he would try to be the best at every single little thing. And kind of like if you watch The Last Dance, when Michael Jordan is playing, like he's shooting quarters with the security guard, and he's getting competitive about that. It's almost like Wilt's like that. He's getting competitive about every little thing. So he cleans up in cards. He's playing the thing, and then finally the 100-point game. He gets 41 at the half, And then as it starts going, the Warriors, it's a misnomer that people think that they lost that game. They destroyed the Knicks. It was against the Knicks.
And it was also a meaningless game.
Meaningless game towards the end of the season.
Both teams weren't making it to the playoffs.
No, and in fact, I believe there's a story that the Knicks starting center missed the game with a hangover. So Wilt was playing against
And possibly, the backup center got fouled out early in the
game. Right, yeah. So what happened was, so Wilt, notoriously horrendous free throw shooter. That was like the one flaw in his game. That's part of why a lot of people compare him to Shaq later. He, in that game, hit 28 of 33 free throws. So shooting underhand, Rick Barry style, Grant style, which, if you know what I'm talking, it's a basketball shot normally is overhand. Looks cool, but people, granny shot between your legs, is floating it up in, doesn't look that cool. That's why no one uses it. Wilt would experiment with that back and forth and shot tremendously from the free throw line in this game, in part because the Knicks were purposely fouling him all the time because he was just hitting everything.
Right. So despite the fact that they're triple teaming him, quadruple, there's that, that Adam Sandler joke?
Go ahead.
The Adam Sandler joke, I think when he's just like a young comedian, he's like, this is my imitation of the Knicks coach during Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. Who's got Wilt? So that's a joke. Yeah. But it's not true because, there were like 12.
Well, especially because once it became the fourth quarter. Now, there were only about 4,000 fans at the game. Again, Hershey, Pennsylvania, neutral site.
I think the reason why they did that sometimes, having games in more random towns, is just to, again, not a very popular sport at the time, just to generate interest in sort of the suburbs.
Right.
Or out there, I guess not suburbs, but like smaller towns
in between,
in the state.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hershey, Pennsylvania. Everything adds, I think, to the lore of it.
Right.
That it's like most of these, this audience of people who work at a chocolate factory.
Right, exactly. It's like, what the hell? And so when the game is not in doubt, and so when it becomes clear that Wilt has got, I forget how many he has when they start doing this, but the Warriors are just feeding it to Wilt because they're like, let's just see if he can get to 100. And the crowd is chanting 100 for the entire fourth quarter.
Well, I think it's also one of those things where all they see, I was listening to a podcast about it, all the audience sees for a while is just a scoreboard. It's not like now where you see like Chamberlain's got 60, Chamberlain's got 70.
Right.
The announcer makes an announcement when Wilt gets to 79.
Okay.
And the reason why 79.
Because that had broken his previous record.
Right. So once you get to like 79, the audience is informed that, oh shit, it might happen.
Which he had set that record earlier in the year.
Yeah, he's breaking himself. Yeah.
This is also, it's his third year in the league. And it's only his third year in the league, and during this season he also averaged 50 points a game, which is incredible. But but going back to the 100-point game, so literally what happens is the Warriors are trying to feed him every single time, and the Knicks don't want to be embarrassed and they give up 100 points to a guy. That's embarrassing.
Right.
And so they're quadruple teaming him and trying to foul him every single time, and also they're using up the entire shot clock every single time to just try to stall him, try to let him not get to 100. So finally, with 46 seconds left in the game, it's disputed a little bit what it is. The radio call has it as a dipper dunk, which was the call for, Wilt, the big dipper, that he dunked it. But most people who were there also say that his teammates say that he finger rolled it in. But for the 100 points, and then the crowd mobs the scene and everything. Wilt would claim that they didn't finish the last 46 seconds of the game, but they actually did.
Well, sure, yeah.
The game wasn't in question, but that the crowd mobbed, it was kind of funny.
I think it's true. I think the fact that it's just audio.
It's because also it's kind of gross if you think about it. Like, because it's not real basketball. The game wasn't in doubt. This guy is just gunning every single time. Incredible that, because also the other misnomer about Wilt was, especially because he was a bad free throw shooter, that he wasn't a good shooter in general. He was a tremendous shooter in terms of he invented the fall away jumper. He was hitting it like crazy. So it wasn't just he was dunking and going right underneath the basket. He was hitting all sorts of shots. And so it would have been incredible to see that because he shot, I don't know his field goal percentage for the game, but it was very good, even though he shot an insane number of times, obviously, to get to 100 points. If you watch Kobe's 81-point game.
Which is the second most ever.
Right. And obviously with the three-point line, it's kind of gross to look at how Kobe's just jacking it up like crazy.
Sure. Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone getting to those numbers at all. But if you are getting to those numbers, it means that you're probably a ball hug, or not a ball hug with your team on board with it, but
well, that's the thing. So his coach Al McGuire that year was his literal strategy was like, okay, we don't have enough scoring to beat the Celtics. So, Wilt, you've got to average 50 points a game. And he told everyone else in the team, Guy Rogers, who was a future Hall of Fame point guard, was like, okay, so when my scoring goes down, what's going to happen to my contract next year? And then they got the owner on board with, like, everyone's going to get a raise. Don't worry about it. We've got to just feed Wilt.
And it is interesting. So during Chamberlain's career, there are stages of it in terms of his play. The beginning stages is score as many points as you can.
For sure.
And he does.
Yeah.
Breaking every, you know, per game record and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Chamberlain, when he retires, is the all-time leading scorer. That's broken by, well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, mm-hmm. who he has a pretty contentious relationship with.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because when then Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem, was in high school in New York City, that Wilt kind of took him under his wing because he was another huge kid, kind of obviously very similar to him in terms of the two of them were by far the biggest prospects of all time. I mean, both of them could have came into the league in high school and dominated. Wilt in particular because of the era too, but Kareem, or Lou, you would say then, would have been able to go into the league then. Obviously, at the time, or maybe not obviously, the time then, the NBA wouldn't allow players in after if they didn't complete 4 years of college. Now you only have to do 1 year of college or equivalency. And back then, it was kind of funny. You couldn't even play varsity college ball when you were a freshman. So you have Kareem and you have Wilt, who couldn't even play varsity ball as freshmen. Going back to Wilt, when he was at Kansas as a freshman, they played the varsity and destroyed them.
Yeah, so Chamberlain goes to University of Kansas. As you said, Auerbach wants him to go to a school, well, Harvard or some, at least some school in Massachusetts.
Yeah, he specifically said Harvard because it was kind of be sneaky about the academic thing, which is the wrong way to get Wilt. Wilt was all about, like, be upfront with me. He was in his book, he was talking a lot about how he was kind of like, okay, I know you're not going to offer me whatever, but like, so I'm not going to hurt for money with all these teams that were like with the boosters and all that stuff. And Kansas actually ended up getting sanctioned after he left because one of the boosters gave him a car.
Cars.
He loved cars. Oh my
love
God.
Love things. Loved it. Yeah.
So much. He was known for driving 130 miles an hour across the country.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. University of Kansas, as you said, freshman year, he doesn't play with the varsity team. Sophomore year is part of one of the most famous college basketball games of all time.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. The original coach that recruited him actually retired before he ever played for him, which is kind of a bait and switch on that guy's part just to get him to Kansas. Fog Allen's the guy's name is Hall of Famer. The guy who replaced him, not a very good coach according to Wilt, but Wilt didn't like any coaches or tolerated some coaches. So they didn't seem to have much of a strategy. The guy who recruited him said that Kansas should win every game in 3 years if it's just Wilt, two co-eds, and two Phi Beta Kappas. Like, so, you know, the idea being that Wilt was a team all to himself.
Right.
When it gets to the title game, Kansas is playing North Carolina, who literally guards Wilt with four guys. And so they're surrounding him. And again, you can play zone defense in college at the time and now too, but there's no defense at 3 seconds. So they were just surrounding him the entire time, and Wilt's Kansas teammates could barely hit a shot. The game goes into triple overtime.
Which is, I believe it was the first finals to go into overtime, right, let alone triple.
Of the NCAA tournament. Now, part of it is that during each overtime, the teams were so tired, they just held the ball the entire overtime and then just took one shot because of, at the time, there was no shot clock in college.
Right, no shot clock in college.
In college,
yeah. And it is so interesting, we'll talk about this more, but great players like Chamberlain in particular change the rules. I mean, or force the league to change the rules.
Yeah, it's so offensive goaltending being like the Wilt rule that they called it, which was that you couldn't. So goaltending, I think most people might know, it's when you block a shot that's above the rim or it's on its way down. Offensive goaltending being similar thing for an offense player above the cylinder or on its way down. What Wilt would literally do is catch his teammates' shots and put them in the basket.
Right.
So because he was like, I don't think that's going anywhere. Grab it and put it in the basket.
So a whole NBA rule essentially built around Chamberlain. The big man, I guess George Mikan would be the most famous big man pre-Russell Chamberlain. Right. I think defensive rebounding may have been him.
Goaltending, yeah.
Right. Everyone could rebound.
Yes, and also widening the lane. So they widened the lane, I think, from 6 feet to 12 feet for Mikan, and then for Wilt, they widened it again to 16 feet.
And the idea there is that you're only allowed to be in the key for a certain amount
key
of time.
Lane, the paint. If you think about a basketball court, it's where the lines are, and so it's a 3 second zone. If you and also the 3 second rule was instituted because of Mikan as well, but that you can't be in that, because if you have a big guy just camping underneath the basket who could just grab it and dunk it every time, so you can't just stay in. Another one of the rules is that that they made because of Wilt is that you couldn't throw it over the basket on an out-of-bounds play, because what they would do is they would just throw it over their own basket from out-of-bounds, if you can visualize that, and then Wilt would just jump up above everybody else and grab it and take it. So now then they switch it to you have to do it from the side. The craziest rule that I don't think anyone talks about enough that they changed because of Wilt was that when you're taking a free throw, you couldn't step over the line. You had to, until it touched the rim, the shooter has to let it touch the rim before he can step over the line. Reason for that is that Wilt would just be able to dunk from the free throw line every single time.
Yeah.
I mean, he would theoretically shoot 100% from free throws, because he would be able to just take two steps and dunk from the free throw line without touching the floor, which then became like an all-time dunk contest dunk for Dr. J and MJ. As like a super impressive thing that no one could believe happened, Wilt would just be able to do it every single time.
And of course, that one, I mean, the other ones too, but that one may have affected his career maybe more than the others.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked at it, but if you have Wilt, nah, it would change everything, because teams would intentionally foul Wilt a ton because he was such a terrible foul shooter. But if you have Wilt make every single free throw, I mean, I don't think there's any contest. He could have averaged 100 points a game. I mean, not average, but he would average like 70 points a game. It's unbelievable.
Going back to the Kansas thing real quick. So yeah. That game, they lose in triple overtime.
Lose in triple overtime by one. And Wilt is just devastated. He's often remarked that was the worst defeat of his career. He felt he let everybody down, in part because that was his whole thing. He came to Kansas to win with nobody else on his team. It's funny enough, the coach of that North Carolina team later was the coach of Wilt's Warriors team when Wilt scored the 100 points.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he had him average 50 points a game, so yeah. A
couple years later, enters the league, highest paid player immediately.
Immediately, yep, and it's kind of, so previous to Wilt coming in the league, the highest scorer was Bob Pettit, who averaged 22 points a game. In Wilt's first game, he gets 43 and 25 rebounds. I mean, it's just, he just comes, he's immediately the best player in the league, at least from a statistical standpoint. You could argue Russell, obviously, because Russell won the titles.
Right.
And Celtics were the best team.
And he's, okay, so just in terms of where he is, Philadelphia Warriors, who,
yes.
And just to track his career, he'll start with the Philadelphia Warriors. The Warriors will move to San Francisco, so he'll go to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Then he goes back to Philadelphia, but now they're the 76ers, mm-hmm. and then eventually traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. Those are the teams he hits.
Right.
So beginning of his career, Philadelphia Warriors, highest paid player immediately, first guy ever to win Rookie of the Year and MVP
right.
the same year.
Yeah.
And as you said, like statistically, it's Babe Ruth. I mean, it's like...
It's 100%, because the thing you see of Babe Ruth is that the home run numbers, it's just like he would have more than teams, you know?
Yeah.
And Wilt is a kind of similar thing where it's just no one had ever seen anything like it.
100-point game is his third year. And the thing that starts with Kansas is the thing we touched on at the beginning, which is like, yes, he's the best individual player, pretty obviously, in terms of offense at least, or in terms of numbers, I should say. But he doesn't win at all.
No, and he gets a reputation as a loser that follows him around forever. Now, what we skipped over for a second was that he his sophomore year at Kansas, like you said, that's the title game.
Right.
Junior year at Kansas, the way it worked at the time was that the conference winner would make the NCAA tournament. So there were no at-large bids. The tournament was much smaller then. So Kansas, Wilt had an injury because someone had kicked him in the balls, and he missed like four games, and so Kansas had lost a few games.
Literally kicked him in the balls.
Literally,
that's an expression. Okay,
literally, and he like couldn't move. It was like a horrible thing.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. People, by the way, just beat the shit out of Wilt, and the refs at the time just allowed it to happen because I think the idea being that like, well, he's Wilt, he can take it.
So much so that I think he threatened to retire like
every single season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, they beat.
So they don't even make the tournament his junior year, and he decides to leave Kansas after his junior year because he just had enough of this shit. He gets a lot of flack for the way he goes about things too, even more so the way that he does them, because the way he left Kansas was he sold the rights to an article to like in Sport Magazine, I believe it was, I think it was Look Magazine, that was like why I'm leaving Kansas, and he just left in the middle of the night, didn't finish his classes, one of these things. And so then what he did was he signed a contract with the Harlem Globetrotters for a year.
Yes. Yeah. So the thing about playing for the Harlem Globetrotters, too, at the time, is that because of the non-popularity of the NBA, you'd get often paid more from the Globetrotters, like significantly
a ton more. Yeah, yeah. The Globetrotters, he got paid more, even though he was the highest paid player in the league his first year in the NBA. He got paid significantly more by the Globetrotters. The Globetrotters, if you're not, for listeners too, if you're not aware, they're still around today. They're a lot of fun. They're mostly for kids. If you go to a Globetrotters game, but it's like comedy basketball. So if you think of, you might remember the N1 mixtapes back in the day, it's kind of like that, where they're doing trick shots and stuff, but it's like professional wrestling for basketball, I guess is the idea.
You also get to, like, at this time and now, like, travel around the country and stuff.
Right, and around the world.
Oh, sorry, I mean world. Yeah. No, I meant world.
Yeah, Globetrotters. History of Globetrotters is fascinating. They were actually Harlem Globetrotters were founded by a Jewish guy in Chicago who just was like, because at the time the NBA was segregated, didn't allow black players. This was way previous to Wilt, like when the Globetrotters were founded. So he was like, well, the black guys are all the best players, and so we can barnstorm around. And so he called them the Harlem Globetrotters because Harlem would be the most famous black area at the time. So it was more of a branding thing, and they would barnstorm around and do. Really, at the beginning, they were just fantastic basketball players.
Sure.
And they would play real games, and they would also do exhibitions. They would do, and during even Wilt's time, they would still play legitimate basketball games. In addition to, they called them reams, which was just their routines that were comedic during the games.
I've watched some of the like clips of it. I don't know if there's any footage of Chamberlain actually doing it, but it's...
I haven't seen
it's
it.
It's like sketch comedy meets trick basketball meets, like... I mean, these... Yeah, clearly amazing... I mean, clearly amazing ball handlers at the least.
Of course. I mean, if you think about, a lot of it would be like, illegal ball handling. Or something
yeah,
like
sure.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, in terms of the tricks with the ball and all that, Wilt says that he actually learned more about, he developed as a skillful basketball player way more with the Globetrotters than he did previously. Because if you think about it, people didn't know how to coach Wilt because also he just was so big. He could just dunk it every time. He was just so much bigger than everybody. The coaches would just focus on the other players too. It's kind of impossible to coach to develop if you're getting guarded by four guys every single time and the other team is just freezing the ball, which means you're just trying not to shoot it. Again, running down the there's no shot clock, so just running down the clock. In the Globetrotters, as part of the comedy, they put him at guard.
Right, right. So actually forcing him to develop some guard-like skills.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure how much to explain, but guard being usually the shortest position, there are exceptions, but usually the shortest guy on the court.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Guard, forward, center would be the progression. Yeah. Well, it's a center.
So, yes, I forgot about. So, the Globetrotter year.
After he gets out of Kansas, he goes to the Globetrotters. He initially actually goes on their summer tour. So, he joins them over the summer first and then for the season throughout the year. Summer tours in Europe, and he has the best time ever. And his time in Europe, I think, is where he really starts racking up the ladies. So he talks a lot about with the Globetrotters how just the entire Globetrotters thing, they were more about scoring with ladies than about actually playing basketball. They would actually work it into their routine. Sometimes they would go through the stands and give out their numbers and stuff like that as part of the games. They would walk around. I mean, because also a lot of them didn't speak. I mean, if you think about at the time, this would be 59. And so in Europe, you got these 6'8" black guys, and Wilt's obviously 7'1", whatever, just walking around. It was like a sideshow. It was crazy. So they would walk around the streets, drumming up interest for the games, walk around jumping and touching things and doing all sorts of crazy feats of strength. And then as they were doing this, there was other guys going around collecting ladies' numbers and saying, if you want to meet Wilt back after the game.
So let's talk about the 20s. So, okay, so in an autobiography that he wrote in 1991,
I believe, 91, when he was 55, yeah.
Chamberlain estimates, and there is, like, he does it using math. It's not like he kept a ledger.
Right.
That he slept with over 20,000 women in his life.
Yeah, I think in the book he says approaching, but again...
Oh, approaching. Okay, approaching. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Fuck that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, come on. But so the most hilarious thing about it is that the only thing that anyone quibbles with is the math. Like, right. It's like, so no one is like, well, he couldn't have, you know, it's literally like when Wilt in one of his interviews says, like, I just should get credit for teaching kids math. Because whenever anyone says, well, 20,000 men, all right, so how many, if Wilt Chamberlain sleeps with 20,000 women and he's sexually active from 15 to 55, how many women per day does Wilt Chamberlain
have to
sleep
with,
SAT, you know?
Like, yeah.
And literally how he came up with the number was one time at his penthouse in Hawaii, I think in the 70s. One of his friends was staying with him, and for 10 days he said, "Well, do you?" And he was keeping a ledger. His friend was keeping a ledger. "Well, do you realize how many women have been around here?" And he's like, "I don't know." And he was 23 women in 10 days.
Okay, so 23 women in 10 days. That gives you an average of 2.3 women slept with per day.
Right, and so then they halved that, and that's how they arrived.
They halved it to be conservative.
Right.
Okay.
And then that's how they arrived at 20,000.
And then, okay, so then multiply that by 365, multiply that by 40, however many years.
Right, so he says from 15 to 55 is when he wrote it. He could have been sexually active for 15. In fact, but some of the things say he was very, very awkward, wasn't good with the ladies until college.
Right.
In college, it says that he was always driving down to Kansas City because he didn't like any of the girls in Lawrence, Kansas, which kind of makes sense.
Okay.
but, I mean, it's in terms of the accuracy of it.
Yeah.
It's a staggering number regardless. Another thing that's kind of gross, I guess, but I mean, in terms of talking about it, he, it's very funny that because he doesn't say it like braggadociously. He says it almost just like matter of fact.
Yeah. And there were later interviews with him where he's kind of taking it back because I think he felt like, obviously it seemed like he was just bragging, but he was like, I don't really get what he was saying, but he's like, no, I was just kind of pointing out that sex was a big part of the culture.
He's Will Chamberlain. He's in the era of free love. And yeah. So there could be a lot of truth to it. And he apologizes later to the women for making them feel like a number and not a name.
Sure.
Which is obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
But it does seem like he legitimately like the ladies. He wasn't like a lecherous guy. He was known for hitting on every single girl, but he wouldn't pester girls. He would just make it known, like, hey, I'm available to you. One of his lines was, he just like, I just wanted someone to let you know today that you would look beautiful. And if you wanted to come by my room later, that'd be fantastic. And with a couple of friends, it would be great.
Perhaps the most, maybe the most incredible, just, you know, Will Chamberlain's life is filled with incredible statistics. There's both in his personal life and in his professional life. On Wikipedia, at least, it says that one person claimed that he was his father.
Right, and that's...
And only one.
Yeah, only one, unverified. So, Wilt was maniacal about wearing condoms. I mean, that's... but the funny thing about it, because back in the day, STDs weren't as big a thing, it's kind of hilarious. One of Wilt's main political issue that he talks to Nixon about, too, is overpopulation. He's obsessed with overpopulation to some degree, and he thinks there are way too many kids running around. So he's always very maniacal about that.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, he avoided all the STD issues. I mean, hopefully, I mean, we'll see. But never, I mean, it doesn't seem like.
But even, okay, so now I'm doing the math. If it's 20,000 women and condoms work 98% of the time? That's still like 700 kids.
That's a great point. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's 99% of the time, right?
99? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Let's hope it's 99. I don't know. But,
I'll try. I don't know. Maybe it's not 700. But we could double check the math. But never gets married. And
no, he says the reason why he didn't get married is because he respects the institution of marriage, and he wouldn't sleep with married ladies,
right?
Which, you know, good for him. but also, he's Will Chamberlain, so women were approaching him all the time. And the owner of the Globetrotter's son says that he thinks he undercounted.
He undercounted.
Yeah,
that's
what
conservative.
He's,
yeah, okay,
that he's, I was with him in Europe. He undercounted. So I mean, we'll see. So who knows? But it's an astronomical number either way. And again, Will was an insomniac. He would often, there was another story where he was having some kind of meeting, and then a girl calls him up and says, I'm having a meeting, mind you come over at 12 and bring a couple friends. And then there's another girl calls up and he says, come over at 3 and bring a couple friends. Like that was just what he did. If you look at later, his house in LA is one of the most incredible things. You can look at it on YouTube or look at pictures, but there's, he called it the playroom, which was a room that was a huge waterbed with velvet couches around and surrounded by mirrors. It's just, if you just look at pictures of his house and said, like, okay, whose house is this? You'd be like, oh, Will Chamberlain's?
Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, you would imagine that that's a room built for sex. If not,
it's 100%. he was openly about that.
No, but I'm just going to say, like, if not, that's just a very strange
That wasn't even his bedroom. He had a separate bedroom, which had a skylight to the ceiling. But he was like, no, we got the playroom and then there's the bedroom. It's different, separate things.
Yeah. Separate church and state. So going back to his playing career for a second, and now I feel like we could talk about some individual games, but also I just want to, you and I in particular, love comparing different players from different eras and comparing Will Chamberlain to Shaquille O'Neal or whatever it is. Let's get right into that for now. Will Chamberlain, all-time greatest NBA players, where does he rank for you?
So do you want to go through my list?
Why don't we go through your list?
Top 10. I made my top 10 list.
Okay. And Jack and I always start with 10.
Yes. So It might be more fun to go from one for this, though.
Okay, but, we could do that.
Because I think the way we're going to discuss it is this. It's kind of funny. You don't want to guess, right?
No, let's just go through it. So Michael Jordan, number one. LeBron James, number two. And we could talk about that.
LeBron, number two. Number three, Bill Russell.
Number three, Bill Russell. So that's... Why don't we go through the 10 and then we can dissect.
Yeah, because I think... So number three, Bill Russell. Number four, Steph Curry.
Number four, Steph Curry?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, we got a lot to talk about.
Number five, Tim Duncan.
Okay.
Number six, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Okay.
Number seven, Larry Bird.
Oh, okay. Above Magic. Okay.
Number eight, Hakeem Olajuwon.
Wow.
Number nine, Wilt Chamberlain.
Okay.
Number 10, Shaquille O'Neal.
So the glaring omission of that top 10 is Magic Johnson.
Is Magic, yeah.
Okay.
Magic is a tough guy for me to wrap my head around because watching him, he looks... I mean, if you watch the games, he kind of seems like Ben Simmons without any defense. I mean, I don't know. It's obviously that's ridiculous, but he's a guy I worry about. People don't really talk about him as a guy that wouldn't hold up in today's game. He played no defense and couldn't shoot.
Okay, so whenever, I guess, like ranking the top 10
I have
players,
Magic 11, by the way, so it's not
Magic,
right.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk about the thing that's most relevant here, which is that Chamberlain is nine and Bill Russell's
number
three.
That's why I put him, Chamberlain nine, Shaq 10. And so, again, if you think about centers, which people compare him to, so I have Russell, I would say Duncan counts as a center, even though he played power forward throughout his career with all the centers, but he's a seven-footer, he's a center. Kareem, Hakeem, Wilt. And then Shaq.
Right. So you have, right. So Jordan, guard slash forward, and then guard, yeah. So let's talk about Chamberlain versus Russell then. So you put Russell six spots ahead of him, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And I guess the team argument is the argument, right? Or team.
Ultimate winner ever.
Yeah. So Russell as a player slash player coach.
Because here's the thing about, like, basketball is a team game. There's five guys on the floor. Russell versus Chamberlain is the ultimate example of how one guy can't win it. Russell made all of his teammates better. Russell was the whole, I mean, if you can talk, I mean, if you listen to any interview with, you can listen to just them talk to each other about it. Wilt and Russell are very honest about it. Russell was like, I got to get this guy, the ball in this spot. I got to cover up for this guy. Russell was the best defensive player of all time. People don't really talk about his passing enough. Russell, after Bob Cousy retired, Russell was the de facto point guard in the half court on offense for the Celtics. He would just be a hub of passing. His own play was just called for other people. Like, would they get the ball in order to pass it? He was almost like a proto Jokic in that way.
Jokic, who is currently
the NBA champion, and was won two MVPs in the last couple of years. And he's currently the best player.
Probably the best player, right? Okay.
You got to check out Jokic, guys, if you haven't seen it. So, beyond just the team success, Russell is responsible for the team's success more than anything else. The Celtics were good before him, and the Celtics were good after him as well, but it was nothing matching it. If you think about 11 titles in his 13 seasons in the league, that's never going to happen again. In terms of, we want to talk about like best records of all time, that's one of the best records of all time, and 8 championships in a row, especially considering it's not about, like, because there were so few teams in the league, every single team was pretty good. So it's not like the Celtics had 5 Hall of Famers and no one else did. The Sixers had 5 Hall of Famers that they went against in 69 and beat them.
Right, because the common counter argument to how impressive Russell's reign was is that there were so few teams, but I guess your point is that, well, if there's so few teams, then all those teams are tremendous.
Right.
So, yeah. I agree with you that Russell goes above Chamberlain, but the more research I did on Chamberlain, the more impressed I was. Led the league in assists one year, which I didn't realize.
Yeah, that was in 69. But the thing that's funny about that, too, is that's the year he, or 68, that was, but that he did that, even that, in a selfish way, because it was, because he was just like, people are saying I'm too selfish, score all the time. I'll show them. I'll lead the league in assists. and so then he would literally, like, during games, he'd be like, he would tell his teammate, all right, I'm not giving you the ball anymore. You're missing too many shots. I'm not going to get the Steelers this title that way. He would pass up open shots for himself because he's like, I got to lead the league in assists.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just he had this weird screw loose, I think, where he was so obsessed with his statistics above all else, whereas Russell was obsessed with winning above all else. Russell famously vomited before every game, so obsessed with winning, he would put the burden on himself. Like you said, after Red Auerbach retired, he was the player coach. Incredible.
Yeah, think about and that. First black coach in the NBA. Black basketball coach, but first black coach in the NBA. Yeah.
Right. And he was also a coach, not a player coach as well, too, but he wasn't successful.
Right.
Yeah. But yes, very significant there, too. If you think about the one-on-one, Russell versus Wilt, their playoff numbers are actually not that dissimilar. The scoring is not close at all, but Russell averaged about like 18 points in the playoffs, I believe, which is not nothing. People think of Russell as a non-factor on offense at all. Russell could run the floor like crazy. In fact, in the 60 finals, it's kind of funny that the Celtics strategy was that Tommy Heinsohn would just kind of grab and put Wilt back on defense so that Russell could just fast break all the time and get ahead of Wilt and score points that way. But so he was a bit of a scorer on offense, but their playoff numbers were not that dissimilar. They both were the two by far best rebounders of all time. In fact, the rebounding numbers are insane, in part because the game was different. At the time, you kind of would just get it up and chuck it up, and because the thought was like, well, you got a big guy who could also clean it up after. So Wilt's average is 22.5 rebounds a game
right.
for his career, which, I mean, that's just insane. No one's going to get that for a season ever. Both Wilt and Russell are the two only guys who get over 20,000 rebounds for their career. That's never going to happen again.
Blocks would be another thing.
So blocks weren't
calculated,
yeah, which is great.
But imaginably, block shots would be a similar deal if they were calculated.
Yeah,
for both of
those guys. Now, to some extent, when you watch the highlights, a lot of them I think would be called goaltends now, just
sure.
because they called it differently. But 100%, I mean, these guys. If you watch some of the games, you can, and people have said you can count them. I mean, there's one game where Will had 25 blocks, which is just, I mean, that would never happen again either. Again, at the what happened at the time, and for both of them really, because Wilt is underrated as a defender, both just the way that their offense worked at the time. Again, if you think about no three-point line, so any shot, the best possible shot is the closest to the basket because every shot is worth 2 points.
Right.
So everyone's trying to get close to the basket. So if you have a rim protector, a guy that's, you know, a big guy that can stay by the rim and block shots, basically that can be your entire defense. So it didn't really matter that the Celtics had Bob Cousy, who couldn't play any defense, Bill Sharman, who couldn't play any defense, Sam Jones didn't play any defense, like all these guys that didn't play defense, Tommy Heinsohn didn't really play any defense, didn't really matter because Russell just cleaned it all up at the rim.
And what I love examining, so I probably bring up Michael Jordan like every other, it's like the one analogy I have in my brain. I don't know, I bring it up in like every other episode, but I almost always bring up Jordan because of his mentality, right? The killer instinct,
right.
The do anything to win type thing. It seems like Russell had it.
Russell was most of that.
Yeah. What was the most of it? You mentioned throwing up before games.
Russell had it, I would say, actually even more than MJ, because it took MJ until, because it's got, MJ kind of has the two careers in terms of he's kind of Wilt for the first bit, where he's just scoring like crazy with shitty teammates, and the team is had limited success. And then finally he gets some better teammates and learns how to work with his teammates a lot better, and then runs off the incredible 90s run. Obviously maniacally competitive in both ways. Wilt was maniacally competitive as well.
Yeah, Wilt maniacally competitive.
But he saw it as himself versus the team.
Yeah.
Russell, always about how do I win, no matter what. In terms of the argument that Russell always had better teams, for the 69 playoffs, Russell's last season, most of his great teammates had already retired. He still had John Havlicek, who was in his prime at the time. But they really didn't have a point guard. They weren't at that good of a team. They were underdogs every single series. They beat the Sixers without Wilt in the first round, and then beat the vaunted, who the next year would become the 70 Knicks, which is a team people wax poetic about.
Willis Reed and Walt Frazier, and yeah.
Exactly.
It's one of those teams where the Knicks only have two championships, so they won that. And the Rangers did a similar thing in 1994. They just retired everybody's number.
Right. They're just like, yeah, Bill Bradley. It's just like David Boucher. It's like, no, this is amazing. And then in the finals, they're going against the Lakers, who it's Wilt's first year with the Lakers, where it's three arguably top 15 players of all time. I would say top 25 guys. And also, I think Elgin Baylor is overrated. But Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, Wilt Chamberlain. At the time, you would have considered three of the top four best players in the league.
Right.
With Bill Russell being the fourth.
So clear favorites over Boston, even though they still have Russell.
Yeah. Right. So if you think about just that, and the year before, too, with the Sixers, when what was his last year with the Sixers, the Sixers had clearly a better team, and the Celtics beat them with Russell. It was just that Russell never lost the Game 7. I think that's just an incredible stat. 10-0 in Game 7s. He just, something about the will to win is there. You can see it from, I mean, you talk about Michael Jordan. If you think about the way team sports are played, there is a certain tenacity that has to go at the end of the games. Bill Russell was known for playing possum for three quarters sometimes with Wilt, and then then clamping down in the fourth quarter. Wilt was known for shrinking in the clutch.
Yeah.
Wilt was terrified of getting fouled because he was a terrible free throw shooter, so he would stop going to the basket. One of the craziest stats, Wilt was so obsessed with stats, he never fouled out of a game in the pros, and he was obsessed with this.
Yeah, Chamberlain never fouled out for a guy who, you know, is a physical player.
Right, and,
yeah.
And even they changed the fouling out from 5 fouls to 6 fouls during his career, but that, you would foul out with only 5 fouls early in his career. And so what would happen was when he got 4 or 5 fouls, he would just stop playing defense because he was obsessed with this streak of never fouling out.
Right.
So then his defense often lagged later in games. I mean, Will, it's too bad because he gets it for, and I know we're jumping around a lot, but he gets it for two teams, which is arguably two of the best teams of all time, the 67 Sixers and then the 72 Lakers, where he is convinced to become more of a distributor and defender than a scorer all the time. And it's kind of funny in his book. He's just like, yeah, I realized that like my teammates liked it when I said, good job. it's just like, oh, okay, well, like, instead of like, he's like, yeah, with the Lakers later, they had a players only meeting. And this is like, you know, you guys aren't pointing away. And he's like, well, whenever we make a mistake, you glare at us and you roll in your eyes and you won't pass us the ball anymore. Like, come on, what the hell is that about? But the thing that's so frustrating about him is that he can actively choose to play like Russell. In these 2 years, his scoring was way down. Like you said, he led the league in assists in 68 with the Sixers. They lost that year. Like I said earlier, that was kind of a selfish way to play, because after they won the title, he's like, what do I do next? Okay, I'll lead the league in assists. I'm already this passer. He changed the way he played the game in order to suit his teammates, but it had to be on his terms always. And he wasn't in service of winning. It was in service of Will.
Right. And, you know, you could say, yeah, it's great that he was able to do it for 2 years, but he just didn't the rest of his career. So why would he be above Russell on that list?
Right. And I mean, there's a lot of like woulda, coulda, shouldas, but there's always that in every single sport. I mean, there's one, Will goes on and on and on about one where he got called for goaltending in the final minute. And he thinks it should have been a goaltend. You can watch the footage. It's 100% a goaltend.
Yeah.
And it's just, he blames the ref for that loss. And he blames someone else for every single one of his losses. When they win, it's because of Wilt. And when they lose, it's because of somebody else in his mind. Now, to be fair, in the press's mind, a lot of people's minds, the opposite was true. That Wilt should have, every time they lost, it was because of Wilt. That Wilt should have won every single time. Jerry West was a much bigger loser than Wilt, only had one title and lost every single time, but he still got the moniker Mr. Clutch. He won the finals MVP in a loss. So at the time in particular, too, nowadays we got like rings culture, as they say, which is, you know, whoever wins the most titles is obviously the best.
Right.
If you go by that, Bill Russell should be the best player of all time. So people don't really go by that.
Right. Now it's almost like when people talk about basketball, rings have almost become individualistic in some way.
Right. I mean, if you think there's a lot of, if you watch Inside the NBA, with Barkley and Shaq are giving each other shit all the time because Barkley never won a ring.
Right. And Shaq won 4. Yeah. So what I got at, this does beg the question that goes from the beginning. So like you rank Russell above Chamberlain. Why did you choose Chamberlain for the podcast?
So
Bill Russell recently deceased, by the way. So Russell would be fair game.
We talked about doing a.
Should mention, you're a Knicks fan, not a Celtics fan, but you have Boston ties.
Yeah, my family's from outside Boston. It's kind of funny actually. My uncle was a basketball player. Was thinking about Red Auerbach. It was at the time, you could kind of. I guess you could just kind of call up Red Auerbach, and my grandfather would be like, "Hello, this is Dr. Buckley. I hear you. I like what you're doing there with the Celtics. My son's getting some college offers. Can you work him out?" And so he gave my uncle a workout.
Wow.
And then after the workout, he talked to my grandfather and asked him, "So what college is he getting offers from?" And then he said, like, "I think you should go to University of Pennsylvania because that's the best academic school."
Yeah. Okay. So not in the region. Yeah.
So right. So my uncle wasn't as good as Will Chamberlain. But then when my uncle was at the University of Pennsylvania, they practiced at the same place that at the time it would have been the Sixers were practicing. So my uncle says it in locker room after practice. He's like, "I want to see what happens. You know, try to meet some of the Sixers." First guy to walk in, Will Chamberlain.
Wow.
So my uncle goes, "Oh, great. You must be the towel boy. The jock straps are over in the bin there."
He said that to a 7'1" guy?
Yeah. Okay. And then thankfully, Will looks at askance and then catches Glenda's eye and he starts cracking up. My uncle starts cracking up and they actually became friendly for a little bit.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay. So you have a personal
There's a personal connection with Will that I thought would be, that's fun. Wilt kind of cultivated friends that he would just like say hi to and know and go out for, you know.
Yeah, any interview with him, by the way, you know, he's incredibly personable. Like, seems like just a very fun guy.
So, like, the rap on him was that he was too nice.
Right.
That he was just the most gregarious guy every night. If you were his teammate and he was glaring at you after a missed shot, you might not have thought he was that nice. But in the world, he was just the nicest guy.
And that's in contrast to Russell, who was a very, you know, very frustrated, particularly in the city, playing in the city of Boston, has a very love-hate relationship, largely hate, while he's playing with the city of Boston the racism he experienced.
People broke into Russell's house and smeared shit all over the place. Yeah. I mean, it was incredibly horrible. Yeah.
And so, but, you know, he was vilified that he wasn't going to sign kids' autographs and stuff like that. And, of course, Russell was like, fuck this. You just vandalized my – like, I'm not going to be your poster child.
For sure. And Wilt was always Wilt more than anything else, meaning that, like, people saw Wilt as, like, an alien. People almost didn't see him, and he didn't see himself. He was not quite, I'm not black, I'm OJ, but he was a little bit like that. Like OJ Simpson had that attitude.
Right.
That even when he like stood up, so he claims, and he might be right, that he ended segregation in Lawrence, Kansas. So he got lured to, when he was with Kansas, he got lured kind of under false pretenses because the coach had kind of surrounded him with black leaders, black community leaders, and said like, hey, this is a great place to be. And so that meant a great deal to Wilt. Then when Will shows up in Kansas, the first place he shows up to, they won't serve him. So he immediately drives up to the coach's house and says, drive him back to Philly tomorrow morning, not going to Kansas. And so then the coach says, sit tight. And then he lets all the business owners know, you got to serve Will. And so what Will would do was that he would sit in every single place and bring all his black friends with him. So he claims he individually desegregated Lawrence, Kansas. Now, tremendous thing to do. Hopefully it did work for, and it seems like it might have, in terms of when Wilt wasn't there after that, they would also serve black people. But the difference being that Wilt did it because he didn't want to be treated that way.
Right.
Not that he cared a lot about black people being treated that way.
Right. And Russell would be, as I mentioned some of the things earlier, other major thing that Russell's contribution to the civil rights movement, when there's the boycott of Boston schools because of the sort of de facto segregation, Russell gets involved in that too.
Yeah.
I mean, Russell, you know, you read any obituary about him when he died, a year or two ago, it's largely about basketball, but he's like Muhammad Ali level.
For sure.
Kind of or Jim Brown, you know, in terms of contributing to more than just the game.
Right. And then that's, and we should do a Russell episode as well, because you get to talk about, Wilt in a different way is, in some ways, I think he really wanted to be a part of white culture, in part because he says a lot of times he prefers white women.
He prefers white women.
Yeah.
Okay.
So most of his friends are Jews.
Yeah.
He grew up in a black and Jewish neighborhood. The otherness that I think a lot of people felt at the time, Wilt, because they were black, he kind of was like that in general because he's Wilt.
Yeah, right. There's the otherness that he feels just as a 7'1", you know, guy who obviously anytime he walks down the street, everyone's staring at him. So, yeah.
So in a way, he wasn't touched by the same amount of horrible stuff that Russell would or other guys would have been because he was just treated differently. I mean, obviously Nixon was friends with Wilt, and Nixon wouldn't have been friends with a lot of black guys.
Right. So let's go back to kind of wrap things up.
I could talk about Wilt forever.
I know. Anyway, we do talk about these things for a long time. I'll ask, let's go back to the 100-point game for a second, because that performance would be up there on the list of most unbeatable, unbreakable records in any sport. Where does it, can you think of anything that's
so
even more?
So I almost think that, so the 100-point game, so the people talk a lot about, could 100 points ever happen again? We see Kobe got 81. I think that there's a chance that someone could get 100, especially with the three-pointers, if someone just gets insanely hot from three and also hits a lot of free throws.
And also the team gets in on that same mentality where it's like, we're going to help this guy.
Where you're feeding him.
He's up to 60, he's up to 70, let's just do this.
And I do think that would happen nowadays, even though there would be some people that wouldn't. Like, if a guy especially is a hot shooter, is having a hot shooting night, you would keep feeding him, I think. I think it's extraordinarily unlikely, but especially because, you know, no one would have thought that, people would have said even 10 years ago, that no one would ever average a triple-double in a season again, like Oscar Robertson did, and then now it's almost routine. Westbrook didn't win the MVP because of it, and then he did it the next year, and everyone's like, what the hell is this about?
This
no
is
one
not
cares.
Special anymore, yeah.
So the game changes in different ways. The game sped up, rules change in different things. I think there's a chance 100 could happen again.
Would you say that the 100's not even Chamberlain's most unbeatable
no,
record?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I think 55 rebounds in a game
right.
is just...
It's too absurd.
It's
yeah.
too absurd because there's just not that many chances of rebounds. And the other thing, Wilt said that was his most impressive record as well because that came against Russell. That was against the Celtics.
But again, it could be the thing where Russell's allowing him to
do it because it's that.
That was the other thing, by the way, which I think maybe, I mean, it's harsh the way that Russell and Chamberlain are compared when it comes to team player winner versus individualistic loser. But the other thing that is insulting to Chamberlain is that Russell's the quote unquote smart player.
Right.
And that Chamberlain doesn't have as high of a basketball IQ type thing.
No, Chamberlain, so I mean, yeah, in terms of evaluating him as a player, I'm trying to describe him because he's not a goon. He's not one of these guys. I mean, people all, even Shaq couldn't shoot outside of 5 feet. He would drop step dunk over everybody, get into the basket. Wilt had a lot of touch. He was known for, I mean, he would dunk all the time, but his main role and move underneath the basket was a finger roll. They didn't really have post moves at the time in the way that you think about it now because traveling rules were different, so you couldn't move your feet in the same way. But he had a ton of touch on the outside. He really, I mean, he claims that when they would do shooting contests in practice, he would routinely beat Jerry West with 25-foot shots. So Wilt would have probably been a stretch five in today's game. If you put Wilt's one of these guys, if you put him
can
in.
Can you explain what stretch five
is? Sorry, yeah. Stretch yeah. five is a big guy. Five is a center who shoots threes.
Right.
So he would, in today's game, see, the argument for Wilt is that Russell could have only been Russell. Wilt could have been Russell. Wilt could have also been Russell if he had a different mindset. Like, Wilt is so singular. If you put Wilt in any single era, he would have been successful. He's arguably the best athlete of all time.
Physical. Purely in terms of physical ability. He was a great volleyball player and also, I think, professional volleyball player after his career ended.
So he's in the Volleyball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's in the Volleyball Hall of Fame.
He's one of the people who was in the Multiple Sports Hall of Fame. So actually, first sport was track. He was a sprinter. He did a shot put.
High jump.
He jumped 6'6", which is jump over me.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So, and he actually says that was his first love was track and that he would have ideally competed in the decathlon in the Olympics, but they didn't allow him to because he was a professional NBA player.
Right.
So he's always griping about that. But I mean, really, he in terms of the stories, he was beating Jim Brown in foot races.
Right.
He loved challenging people.
Jim Brown, who is also famously multi-sport guy.
Yes, yes.
Like the greatest lacrosse player ever.
Exactly, because that's what, if you think about, if we're going through a list of potential best athletes of all time, I mean, Jim Brown is on there, multi-sport guys.
Right.
You got Bo Jackson, you got Deion Sanders, Jim
yeah.
Thorpe.
Yeah.
You can go back to, I don't know if you want to go to Achilles or...
that's right, yeah. We'll go to, yeah, fictional...
Goliath. Who's namesake?
Goliath, yeah. Chamberlain yeah. calls himself Goliath,
yeah.
too, that no one likes him.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
because
a famous
he's...
line. Nobody roots for Goliath, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, probably true. Yeah.
Has truth to it. But again, I think that there is the double thing where it's like, because Russell would also sort of be stone-faced, people vilified him too. So I don't know if he's the David necessarily.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think...
In people's minds, I
right.
mean. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I feel like a couple years... that the voters voted Walt Bellamy for his team all NBA because they didn't like Will or Russell.
They just don't like either.
They just didn't like
yeah.
either of them, yeah.
Yeah, unbeatable records. In a game, yeah, I guess it's hard to compare to because like in baseball, Cy Young, 511 wins won't be close.
That's almost like Wilt's rebound numbers.
Because that's
yeah.
games and rules change right. so much that it's just, you know, now a professional baseball pitcher, if they get 200 wins, yeah. will most likely be a Hall of Famer.
Right.
And... Cy Young had 511
Not that long
wins.
Ago, it was 300 wins. And it keeps it
yeah, exactly. It
way,
keeps
yeah.
going down because relief pitching is right. so much more important. And 511 win. But the thing that people always say about Cy Young is that he also leads the league of all time in losses.
Right.
So it's like games just change.
Right. So in terms of the most unbeatable record, I think his rebounding is the 511 wins. If you think about just the number, the averaging 50 points a game, I think is... more impressive than the singular 100-point game even.
Right.
Just because if you think about, like we say, anyone can have a hot game. But if you're averaging 50 points a game, that's, I mean, what guy to get 50 points is a headline.
Right.
If a guy gets it once.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't think that's kind of the most unbeatable record that Will has.
I was going to say just in terms of, so obviously, you know, you talk about movies like Moneyball with baseball, but basketball does the same thing. There are all these new statistics that... really have formulas that are even more complicated than Will Chamberlain's having sex with 20,000 women formula. Yeah. I guess PER, player efficiency rating, is one of the most famous for basketball.
Yeah, that's a purely offensive one, but sure, yeah.
So for that one, it's a little weird because Jokic, the current arguably best player in the league, and Anthony Davis. So it seems like there are some more modern players.
So that's part of the reason why I wanted to talk about Wilt as well, because of the modern comps are so fun. So and a lot of things like Jokic is doing in particular, a lot of people saying first time since Wilt Chamberlain. You know,
right, that's the guy.
And with
Shaquille O'Neal's dominance too, mm-hmm. people were always comparing it to Wilt, not only because they were really tall, big centers, but also that word dominance, mm-hmm. I feel like, is often used like, oh, Wilt Chamberlain wasn't necessarily the greatest ever, but he was the most dominant player ever, which probably has some...
I think that there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah, I mean, Wilt is almost like a guy that it's like if he solves the question of if you took Shaq in a time machine and put him back then, it would be Wilt, you know? It's
right.
Like, so it's...
All I was going to say with that PER stat is that Chamberlain is seventh all time.
And
Jordan
MJ won. MJ number one, yeah.
Yeah. I'll just say quickly, with your top 10 list going
what
away from Wilt and Russell... Well, let's talk about the obvious one, Jordan versus LeBron. Mm-hmm. Is it pretty obvious for you, Jordan won?
Yeah, I was closer to putting Russell over LeBron because
right.
of the win
okay.
than LeBron over Jordan.
And I think probably the most surprising, other than omitting Magic, about your list is how high Steph Curry right. is. So Steph at 4.
Yes.
Explain that one.
By far the best shooter of all time. If you put him in any era, he just... Everyone just loses their fucking mind. He's going to shoot. And so if you put it, like, because people don't think of him as a time machine guy, but even if you put him back when in Wilt's era, I mean, he would still be able to shoot from back then and he would be wide open every single time and they would keep letting him shoot wide open shots. I feel like he would have maybe got 100 points a game because people would just be like, what the hell's going on? I think Curry is so underrated in terms of the team success. I think that there's almost no other star who would have accepted KD to be the alpha
right
dog
so
on those teams.
Steph Curry, KD, Kevin Durant, basically Curry won a championship, then had the year with the most, where the team had the most wins in history. Mm-hmm. They actually lost the championship, they had the most wins in history, and then they took in one of the best players in the NBA, like a top 3, you would say, top 2.
Yeah,
probably. Kevin Durant.
Yeah, the top 3 would have been LeBron and Curry and Durant.
Curry also had the, I don't know what you call it, humility or
I
Wilt.
I just think it's a Russell-like desire to win over individual stuff. Curry is known for, I mean, he runs around off of screens. He is a one-man offensive wrecking crew that no one has ever seen since Wilt, I'd say. Just because defense has to bend completely towards Curry. You need to have... The spacing, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it, and not too basketball-centric, but the spacing that he affords just by his shooting just allows, you see the Warriors' backdoor cuts, the motion offense that they run, it just allows the whole thing to hum, and in particular, it's singular. Every other team in the NBA basically runs spread pick and roll, and the thing that's so fun about it is that the Warriors have run spread pick and roll with Steph Curry all the time, and he's fantastic at it. But he plays this other way, which is a lot harder to play, where he's running around screens, and the team is much better for it. I think that on defense, he's underrated. He gets a lot of steals, and he's bulked up in strength. Now, you could argue that I have him overrated in part because of the defense, that if you talk about Tim Duncan was a top 5 offensive and defensive player during his entire career.
Right. And people would make a lot of comparisons between Duncan and Russell in a lot of ways, too.
Sure, yeah. In terms of the winning above all else type of stuff, too, and setting the culture.
Yeah. And being willing to focus on whatever part of the game would make the team best. Yeah, right.
What's your Curry take? I'm curious.
So I don't know if I would put him as high as you would. I agree with the any era thing, although the only exception to that is that if there was no 3-point line, then his value obviously goes down,
yeah. And also it should be said about the any era thing is that Steph, in another era, probably his career would have ended up because of ankle problems, that the medical advances really helped him out too, maybe. But if you're saying like just popping him a time machine from his prime and then moving him back then,
right.
I think, yeah.
With the Magic omission, just to go to that for a second, the only reason why I'm surprised by it is because by putting Russell so high, you clearly have a emphasis on championships. And Magic Johnson won 5.
Yes.
Which is more than a lot of the people that are on the top 10.
Magic is the type of guy who I'd say I would ding more because of his team than most others. I don't think Magic could have been a one-man team. Magic had Kareem and James Worthy and all these other guys his whole career. Well, obviously Kareem retired before his end of his career.
Yeah.
But I would say much more, obviously, again, Magic is incredible. He's a top 11 player of all time. But in terms of putting him against any of these other guys, I was trying to think of it in terms of if I'm drafting a guy number one, you know, or if we're drafting all players and we're saying
I'm going to build my team around them,
I would prefer to build it around any of those top 10 guys before Magic.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Jack, thank you so much for being on the podcast again. The range of talking about Marquis de Lafayette to Will Chamberlain and being as well-versed in both of them is incredible.
So fun, man.
And, of course, this conversation, we'll probably walk outside now and just continue the
conversation.
I was going
to say, keep going this range, so yeah.
Thank you so much, man.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me.